15 to 20 million.
Jump out there.
I am your future.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We're our national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio, broadcasting here on 860 AM, serving southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware. And we're very happy that you're tuned in. And by the way, people from all over the USA are now tuning in on the internet. And if you have family or friends that are on Alexa, they can go to Alexa 860 AM every Wednesday from 11 AM until 12 noon. And also go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link. Also, after today's broadcast, we will have a rebroadcast up on the net, and you'll be able to just click on that Listen Anytime link. And by the way, you can also listen to past broadcasts and see what the people had to say and see if their predictions were correct or not. First of all, I want to say a special thank you to Larkin Conley, National Small Business Advocate, Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store. And by the way, you can find Mark's link right there on the front page of American Workers Radio. It's next to his picture. And Mark Andel also does a radio show. Do check it out. And be sure to check out the U.S. Debt Clock right under Mark's link. Also with us is Rich Loges, principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky, and I am Michael Blihash. And oh boy, we're going to have a special guest with us today. And you know, as we begin the month of May 2022, I think we have to take a long, hard look at what has changed in America over the last 16, 17 months. I don't think the changes have been very good for the American people and for America's economy, and that adds up to a lot of reasons for that. One of them is the cost of energy, delivery, driving our cars, taking our kids to school, doing all those types of things. Now, we all have been hit by major inflation, and that brings about many difficulties in the economy of the United States, the country that we want to live in, love, and have a place for our children, and their children. Many of us are disappointed that the leadership in America's national elected offices in Washington have been doing nothing to correct inflation. It's all bibble babble and nothing really that is out there to help the American people to rise back to where they were just a year and a half ago. Today, I'm going to ask our panel members to ask questions to our special guest, who is Daniel Turner. Daniel has been on our broadcast before. I believe it was on March the 2nd of this year. And Daniel is the founder and executive director of Power the Future. And for nearly 20 years, he has worked in communications and public affairs for several nonprofits. Daniel started off doing so many things in his life to try to help people. He's been interviewed on dozens of radio and television programs. He offers op-ed pieces in newspapers. He's just an all-around guy, and I can tell you, I guess he's that way because Daniel's a native of Queens, New York. And how about we welcome our special guest, Daniel Turner, back to our broadcast. Daniel, what's new with all that you're doing?
Oh, well, first of all, thank you for having me on. It's great to be back on the program. And energy is, it runs the economy, right? It runs the world. So my issues I specialize in never seem to be quiet, especially in this current administration and current climate. So we are busy, but I'm looking forward to a great conversation with you and your other panelists. And again, thanks for having me on.
Daniel, you see what's happened in America in the last 16 months. As a person very, very involved in gas and energy, What benefit did President Biden's executive order in January 2021 have on the American people?
None. If anything, it's done an awful lot of harm, and we're experiencing it. A lot of what we are experiencing right now comes from the first days of the Biden administration, where he did pass a number of executive orders limiting access to federal land for oil and gas exploration, stopping the permitting process for oil and gas. He made it very clear there was going to be no more fossil fuels in America, and he's gotten his wish. Our supply has really diminished considerably in the last 16 months, and as a result, prices have gone through the roof, and now we're experiencing those prices in everything. It amazes me that Biden or his team thought oil was just what you put in your car, and if we make oil expensive and people's gas is expensive at the pump, then they'll buy our electric vehicles. And they didn't realize that oil and gas run the world. And so we've made everything from the price of milk to your airline ticket to go see grandma for Easter. We've made everything 40-50% more expensive, because this is exactly what it resulted from these terrible, terrible decisions.
You know, Daniel, as a person who's in the industry, I talk about this particular issue. In the world, as of today, May 4th, 2022, I understand that only 1% of the cars and trucks in the world are electric generated. Is that a fact?
Yeah, it is. Last year, for example, calendar year 2021, and the last couple of years are a little bit of an anomaly because of COVID and because of the fallout that had on the economy. But last year, just as an example, Americans purchased around 17 million new vehicles, not including, you know, you buy a used car, but we've purchased 17 million new vehicles. And of them, I think around 100,000 were electric vehicles. So, yeah, it is not a common purchase. It's growing in its popularity. That brings a whole host of another new issues and new challenges. I don't oppose electric vehicles necessarily. I oppose the subsidies for them. If you buy an electric vehicle right now under the Biden administration, you get a $12,500 rebate from the government. Why? I didn't get that when I bought a truck. I need a truck for my farm, by the way, and not the Ford electric vehicle, which is $90,000, because surprisingly, a lot of small farmers can't afford a $90,000 pickup truck. But why do you get a $12,500 subsidy for an electric vehicle? Because the Biden administration wants you to buy them. But still, even with that new rebate and all the jazz and buzz and excitement about electric vehicles, they are a very, very small percentage of the cars we purchase, because that's not the way our world works right now.
And it's not only in America. People keep saying, oh, we neglected America. A lot of the other countries have electric vehicles. I say, where are they? What countries are they? So I went on the internet, I Googled it, and some countries have no electric vehicles. And some of them have maybe 8,000 or something. So what the hell is going on? I don't understand it. Our national elected leaders allowed gas and the overall energy prices to just continue to rise, do nothing to address the fact that there's only 1% of the cars and trucks and other types of vehicles in the United States that are requiring electricity. 99% require gas and fossil fuels. What type of nonsense is going on in this country? It's like we went from a decent level of inflation, annual inflation, to something that is so ridiculous now that it's hard to believe. And people are saying, well, Michael, the people are now making $15 an hour. That's $600 a week. Hey, what can you buy? What can you pay for when you take out the taxes? You're down to like $460 take-home pay. What do you pay with that? Times 52. Yeah. What's the bottom line? It doesn't make any kind of sense. And yet these people in Washington, because they're they're pampered. They have chauffeurs. They have people who take care of their apartments. They're given all the secretarial services. They have no idea of the reality of what is going on in this United States of America. Other countries, you know, they're still depending on the gas coming in, and they had to do business with people like Putin and all. It's been a very tough thing for us to go through, but how do we get out of it? What do we do right now to get back to where we were 16 months ago?
Yeah, and there are many things that we can do, but it's the administration that has to do it. Like it or not, the federal government is incredibly powerful, and I'm sure we could have a great conversation of political scientists and libertarians would join in this party, and we would all talk about how is it good or bad, or what are the consequences of having a powerful central government. And those are very important conversations to have. But stepping away from just pure lofty thoughts, the reality is the federal government controls an awful lot about our lives. And one of them that it controls is how much oil and gas we're able to produce. I agree 100% with this administration when they say the president doesn't set gas prices. He doesn't. He doesn't set oil prices. But he does control the ability to produce oil and gas. And if he doesn't allow the industry to do it, and he's not, well, then we're going to produce less. And as we produce less but consume the same amount of oil, the laws of just economics say, therefore, the price is going to go up. And that's where we are. You know, it's the same thing as I may have used this last time I was on your program. It's the same thing of anyone who says, well, you know, I want to build a deck on my house. Well, good luck. But you find a county commissioner who's going to stop you and say, did you get our permission to build this deck? Of course you didn't. Did you get permission to put a new roof on? Did you? Heck, if you want to put a bathroom on, sometimes you need the government's permission. Depending upon where you are, government decides what you do in your own private property. You're going to tell me government just willy-nilly allows you to start drilling for oil and gas? So the administration says, well, the president doesn't control gas prices. Yes, that is true. But he does withhold the ability to produce gas. And case in point, if you have an administration who hates this industry, and he does, and doesn't want to give permission, and you still have a Department of Interior where 50% of the staff is still working from home because of COVID, well, what are they doing all day? You know, if you need a permit and you got, you know, Joe Schmo who's in charge of that division and it's sitting on his desk in his office in D.C., he's not in D.C. He's at home because of COVID. And so the entire process is so slowed and is so cumbersome that this is all being – that it all adds up, right? It took months and months to get here, but we got here. And you take all of these regulations, you take all of this lethargy, and you take a real hostility to oil and gas, and this is the result. And they wanted this. Let's make that very clear. This is not a coincidence. This is not an accident. This is absolutely deliberate and intentional. The pain is intentional. They wanted you to be angry. They wanted you to suffer because that is how they get what they want, which is wind and solar and electric vehicles. So make no mistake about it. Joe Biden, when he says, I'm doing everything I can, lie. He wants this. The government wants this.
Daniel, how long would you estimate that it would take to actually get 50% of the cars on the road right now with electric batteries?
40 years.
I was going to say that. That's right. 40 years. And by the way, happening in America is no different than what Putin has been doing with the Russian gas. Russia has always used gas and energy in Europe as a weapon to control the people of those countries because they had the biggest area, the biggest fields where the gas was coming from. A lot of those smaller countries don't have that. Russian gas has not been without its control factor. With 1% of the cars in America electric, I'd like to know what in Europe is electric. So they're not even paying attention to it. Putin has done so much. I mean, I'm sure you heard what he's doing to different places like Poland and other countries. He wants them to pay for their supplies in rubles, because he doesn't
Absolutely.
Want to go through the process of dealing with money and having all these new problems that the World Bank and all has put on him. So, I mean, it's not supposed to be a weapon. America's leadership should not make this a weapon, but help us to make America's economy get bigger and better. Instead, they are turning us upside down and making hell. I'm going to ask the first person today to welcome our great guest, Daniel Turner. Larkin Conley, how are you doing? And you're a man who has been in the gas industry, so you have a good idea. I'd like to know how many years you think it's going to take before those cars go to electric.
That's a very interesting question. Good morning, everybody. From sunny Florida, where it is currently 82 degrees.
Oh, boy.
And sunny. Sorry, I hate to rub it in. How many years? It's going to take 40 to 50 years to convert the American automobile. So I don't know about your number. It all depends on how strictly the government works on this. But remember, the three minerals that go into making batteries, nickel and lithium, and I forget the third one, none of that is mined in this country. So, and a lot of it is mined in Africa. And, you know, guess what? China's got a foothold in Africa. They've purposely done that. And I don't know. This President Biden, and this isn't political. This is just a commentary on the current circumstances. This guy, I mean, this administration has absolutely no idea what they're doing. They really don't. They live from day to day and from poll to poll. It's frightening. You know, since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, the European Union has paid more than $37 billion for Russian energy and supplies. A big chunk of that goes to the number one member of the EU bloc, Germany. And the country's central bank reported yesterday that an embargo on Russian gas would plunge the EU into a recession. So just how inclined are they going to be to cut Russian gas off? And one of the things we haven't talked about is energy. But a significant portion of this energy is natural gas. And he even whacked the Keystone pipeline, which was passing a tremendous amount of natural gas. So, you know, we make no plans. We have no idea what we're going to do. We're going to build 50 million battery stations across the country for electric cars, but there's no electric cars. I mean, who's going to be using these 15? And you watch our wonderful federal government, and I challenge everybody that listens and anybody I know, tell me one program that the federal government has successfully pulled off. Name one. That's all I want is one. And you know what? I'll even take half of a success story. They have managed to screw up everything they put their fingers on. That's why I don't want them to have anything to do with anything. Provide a national defense. That's what the Constitution asked for.
That's exactly right.
One that I wanted to ask our guest is, yes, I have been in the oil business for over 40 years, is how does one compensate for this lack of energy coming from the European Union, cutting off Russia? You know, how do we compensate? How do we stop that. I mean, you know damn well the EU is going to turn around and start paying for natural gas in rubles because they need that gas. Can we create enough gas quickly? Hell, if he hadn't touched the Keystone Pipeline, it had been four-fifths done, and we would have been in a position to pipe it down here, put it on board ship, and feed Europe. But no, we're going to end up being a net buyer of natural gas ourselves. So it's amazing.
I want to turn for a minute to another person who knows a lot about fuel and needs a lot of fuel to operate his business, and that is Mark Andel. Mark, welcome our special guest, Daniel Turner. And what do you see with all that's going on?
Yeah, how you doing, Mike and team? Daniel, thanks for coming back on. Learned a lot from your last show when you were on, and a lot of respect for you. A lot going on, Mike. You know, we talked, you guys touched on rapid inflation, product shortage, worker shortage. All that's playing havoc with my businesses, both General Welding and Fabricating and the Made in America stores. You know, unlike the Made in America stores, we don't depend on shipping containers, so that's great. But the worker shortage shows up, and that's probably the number one thing hurting companies from growing right now, the worker cultural change and trying to get people back to work. But I had, for Dan, I had my number one customer, I won't say name, but they supply Halliburton, BP, ExxonMobil, separation systems that go on oil rigs, desanders, desilters, degassers. So I've made them for the last 20 years. We were pretty well shut down for the last 2 years. I just talked to one of their head people this week, and I said, how's it going? He said, not good. I said, what's the biggest problem? And because usually when the oil goes up, the drum goes up, this company does very well. When the drum oil's high, they're producing a product, and a lot of their product goes on the oil rigs, and they get used up. They're like razor blades. They're items that have abrasive product going through them, so they're always used up. So we were welding and fabricating a lot of components for them. But he said with the drum up, number one problem is the worker shortage. You know, the parents are getting the kids out of the basement, telling them they got to go to work, and then they actually tell him when he's trying to hire them that my parents want me here, I don't want to be here, so they don't want to train. And the average startup on employee is about $4,000 at this company because of the welding gear and the helmet and whatnot. But the other problem was the sanctions that were put on with this Russian war in Ukraine. A lot of people they were selling to, their equipment, they can't deal with them countries. And even if they said they try to go through Greece because Greece they can sell to, and then maybe Greece could sell them to the people they used to sell them to, they can't because they trace and track the end user of the product. So this hurt this company that I was my number one customer even worse than, the worker shortage is one thing. The oil's high, so they should be booming. They want to ramp up. But these sanctions are actually hurting this company. So, Dan, you have any input on that?
That's what we're experiencing in every other aspect of this industry, right, between the sanctions and between the dramatic supply shortage. I think I can't talk specifically about this one particular issue you brought to me, but I will say this. I think what we're experiencing is how well-oiled of a machine the energy industry was. And a little bit of what Adam Smith did talk about with his invisible hand, right? How there are millions of invisible hands that are all working in cooperation to produce, you mentioned products that are necessary for oil and gas that I'm sure the Biden administration has never even heard of. And yet they're probably multi-million dollar companies with thousands of employees and essential to making it function. And yet they're taking a hit, right? And so I think what we're experiencing is when government tinkers with the free market, they don't realize how pervasive the damage is going to be. I've tried to explain to people, why are we having food shortages right now? What does this have to do with fossil fuels? And then when you explain where your nitrates come from and your fertilizer and your pesticides and diesel prices and shipping prices, and people say, oh, yeah, I guess that makes a lot of sense. So, you add some really bad COVID decisions, and COVID, it's easy now in hindsight. I'm not going to cast too much blame on a lot of elected officials, because, you know, it was scary. No one knew what was happening. But there were a lot of very, very bad COVID decisions that were made. And now you have a terrible Biden administration, which is punishing this industry. And you add them together, and I have just bad news across the board. And I don't see it improving anytime soon.
Yeah, that, you know, Dan, when I talked to this head contact at my my main customer, I said, what's the answer? And he said, turn on the spigot, start drilling. This administration would have to change, allow drilling now. That's the only way you can start to fix what's going on.
Yeah.
You agree?
I think that's accurate, but even that is going to take a solid year to ramp up.
Yeah.
I mean, if we remember from the day President Trump was inaugurated and took office and started to talk about rolling back regulations and easing the ability of the free market to operate, it really wasn't until the end of 2018 that we started to see production ramp up to the point that we were congratulating ourselves for being energy independent and we were exporting oil to the rest of the world. But, I mean, that took a solid almost 2 years. And so if Biden reverses course tomorrow, which he's not going to, but if he did and said, you know, I've made a mistake, let's go back to where we were,
exactly,
it's not going to come online very quickly. What fascinates me about this industry and really just industry in general, and you gentlemen know this a lot better than I do, is that it takes so much effort and so much work and so much time to come online, but boy, can it get shut down in a heartbeat. And that,
yes,
and that's, that vulnerability is what the government has preyed upon.
Wow, that's a well-said statement. That's right. All that effort within one day from an executive order, we're suffering now. Dan, there's not anyone that tells me that they're not suffering. They're not going to be doing this. They're not going to be doing all their mountain trips this year. They're not coming out touring. They're not able to give what they did because, especially when it comes to travel. I mean, a year and a half ago, in Philadelphia, the price of a gallon of gas was $2.52. Right now, I was driving in today, it's $4.39. I mean, where do you get to go 20 miles an extra $2 per gallon? It doesn't make any kind of sense. And yet,
no,
the thing that really makes everybody sick, when I say this on this and other broadcasts, there are no elected officials in Washington talking about it, saying we got to stop this. No one went into the room with Biden's and said, wait a minute, Joe, 99% of the cars in America require gas to operate. What, we can't do this. You just can't sign an order because a courier or one of these other people said this is a thing to do, and if we want to get action, we have to sign this order and make all these things happen. It's going to take 40 years. As you said in the beginning, it's going to take 40 years. So you mean to tell me out of the 535 people in Washington, there's not a normal person who's on the news every day, who's making a campaign about this every day? I don't hear it. All they're talking
no.
about is nonsense. Biden is this, Biden is that, Harris is this. This is not what this should be. And first of all, I think it's time for a constitutional amendment where the government does not control our lives to the way they have been at this point. This is a way to destroy. This is destroying America. In Europe, under Putin, under Russia, those countries have been, you know, pushed to the wall. You either do what we want or we're going to push you down. And people are going to these places and saying, we don't have enough oil in our country. We have to be obedient to Russia. Well, those countries are bringing this stuff in. We have enough oil in this country for 150 years, 200 years, I'm told, if we bring it from Alaska and Canada. Is that true, Daniel?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, our oil supplies, and it's probably even more than that, but we don't really know how much we have because in so many parts of the country, we haven't been able to explore. So ANWR, which we've never done even experimental drilling up there, is estimated from 4 to 14 billion. No one's really sure how much oil is up there, but Alaska, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, which just a couple days ago Biden reduced by 85% access to the Strategic Petroleum Reserves, you know, there's probably another 15 billion barrels of oil there as well. We seem to find oil most places that we look for it, which is pretty remarkable and pretty providential. So we don't need to look anywhere for our energy. And as you, as one of your other panelists just rightly pointed out, when it comes to the wind and the solar and the electric vehicles, the components are not produced right now in America. They are produced predominantly in Africa, in mines that are operated by the Chinese, in mines that use child and slave labor, and then the Chinese sell them to us at a premium. Now, we have a lot of those minerals and rare earths and metals here in America, particularly in Alaska. But we are not allowed to operate those mines. You couldn't open a cobalt mine in Alaska. That there are, the largest copper discovery in the world was discovered in Alaska, Pebble Mine. It's been fighting for 20 years to come online. Now, every electric vehicle has about 20 pounds of copper in it. We need copper. If we're going to go green, we need copper. Wind turbines, solar panels all have copper. All the wiring is copper. Why are we not opening up a copper mine in America? Well, because the environmental groups don't want you to open up a mine because it's bad for the environment. But the environmental groups want us to use these materials. And so in the basic sense, I've said this many times, even a five-year-old who opens his first lemonade stand intrinsically understands, miracle of God, intrinsically understands he's got to get his hands on some lemons. Right? He knows he needs the materials to open that stand. Here we have an administration telling us we are all going to, by government fiat, we are all going to use electric vehicles, but we're not securing the sourcing for these vehicles. Well, then you know this is just a joke, right? I mean, a cruel one, but you know this is not a serious proposition. This is not serious policy. This is just all political bloviating. Because if they really wanted us to have electric vehicles, the number one thing they would do is secure the lithium, the cobalt, the copper, the nickel, the cadmium, the zinc, all of these materials, which we have in America, and we would be opening up mines all across this country. But we're not doing that because it's not serious, because it's all one big, gigantic lie. And that's what I'm trying to fight against.
But, you know, Daniel, there's no sense to doing this because it's killing America's businesses. It's killing our workers. It's hurting our families. I mean, this doesn't make sense. I'm glad that you brought up a lot of this stuff because most people think that electric cars are going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years. And they, in fact, some people argued with me that I can't imagine there's only 1% of the cars electric. I said, well, that's really all it is. You don't have to take my word for it. Go Google it online and you'll be able to see for yourself. That's it.
Now, one very interesting thing about that, the country that is leading the world in electric vehicles is China.
China.
And the reason why is because China does not have a domestic supply of oil. They are the world's largest importer. They have to import around 20 million barrels of oil a day. So if you're Xi Jinping and you look at your country and you look at your vulnerabilities, you say, this is incredible vulnerability. If the world ever cuts us off from oil, we're dead. So what is he doing? Well, he's making everyone buy electric vehicles because they secured all of the source materials for electric vehicles. And how is he powering them? He's building a coal plant a week. Because he knows he needs a secure and reliable and inexpensive source of electricity for his fleet of electric vehicles. So now Xi Jinping is a truly evil person, and the communists are an evil country, but they're not joking around, right? They take world domination very, very seriously. And so if we look at them and say, well, this is what he's doing because he is serious about taking over the world. This isn't about climate change. People say, well, he's going green because of emissions. No, he's not. He could care less about emissions. He cares about power. And look at all of the logical steps he's taken to secure it. Now you have the Biden administration, and look at what he's doing. So tell me who is serious about running the world, and tell me who is a joke.
Well, that you are exactly correct. Wow, that's very, very interesting. What I don't understand is I've made numerous calls to various well-respected elected officials in our Philadelphia, southeastern Pennsylvania area. Nobody wants to tackle the issue of saying, well, maybe the executive order was not correct. Maybe we have to refigure it, revisit it in 2 years, 5 years, when we can come to the people and say, look, we now have 50% of the cars in the United States running on electric. Let's do something to make it 60%, 70%, 80%. That's not the case. When you're 1%, it's like put 100 pennies on the table and then pull one penny aside, and that's what you have right now in the United States. The other 99% need gas to go, or they go nowhere. Daniel, how about we welcome Rich Logis? Rich, welcome our outstanding guest, Daniel Turner.
Good morning, Michael, and everybody. And Daniel, thanks so much for coming back on. So I have a couple of – these are not – let me preface with saying they're not gotcha questions, because I think gotcha questions are – they insult the intelligence of our audience, our guests, and our panelists. Given your work, I think it's safe to say that you probably meet a lot of working families, small business owners. Is that accurate to say that? People you meet,
yeah,
out and about.
Actually, I live in rural America, and I spend most of my time in rural America. And I started the organization because that's where our energy comes from, right? I've told people many times, if AOC had coal miners in her district, she would think very differently about them. But she's never met a coal miner because they don't live in Manhattan or in Queens, where I'm from. So yes, I spend a lot of time in rural America, where you meet small businesses, small mom-and-pop shops, small 10, 15-person factories, et cetera, and that's where I live, and that's where I spend most of my time.
That's a totally fair answer, and I agree with you. When you are out and about talking with small business owners, working families, I would imagine they're probably talking about cost of living, inflation, anxiety,
yeah,
about how to keep their businesses open, support their families. What I'm curious is, have you had a conversation, let's say, in the last between the last time you were on the show and now, has anyone had a conversation with you and said, you know, Daniel, I am really, really worried if I'm going to be able to afford my lease and my rent when it comes up for renewal in 2 months? I think that we should investigate Anthony Fauci if the Republicans take the majority in Congress. Has anyone said that to you?
What they have said, not specifically that, but they have said this. We were deemed non-essential, and I was told to shut down for a year. And I know there were these, PPP plans and all of that, but really none of it worked out. And now I'm underwater. And so I don't know if they've necessarily called for an investigation, but when I talk to people who say the government crushed me, and now the government wonders why I'm not producing a product at a price point that they deem acceptable. And now I'm the bad guy, right? That's the other frustrating thing when I talk to especially coal miners who will say, I'm the one who's hated in town because I'm the one who fired everybody. But I have to still pay insurance on this mine that produces nothing. I have to pay, all these other bills, and we don't produce anything. I'm the hated guy. So I do hear an awful lot of that frustration. Yeah.
Mm.
No, and all fair points. Because the lockdowns, in hindsight, were really bipartisan, right? When lockdowns went into effect in 2020, Joe Biden was not the president. And that's not a criticism of anybody. It's just that we have the benefit now of some hindsight. And there's no question that businesses did suffer. So what I'm asking is, the incumbent party – The opposition party always has to make a case for why the incumbent party should be ousted. And when I listen to, let's say, Mitch McConnell, who's the Republican Senate leader, when he's asked about the GOP's agenda if they retake the majority, his answer is that there is no legislative agenda. Have you seen these stories where he said that? So his answer is, just trust me. Now, I'm going to apply that to your line of work. So you are executive director of a nonprofit. So if you went to a donor and asked for money, let's say a sizable amount, and the donor asked you for a plan, an idea, something that shows how that money will be spent, would you show him that, or would you just say, write me a check and trust me?
Exactly. No, I think if you're going to write me a check, you know, you're going to want to know how your money is being spent.
Okay.
So absolutely, you know, trust but verify.
Why does the Senate,
let's put it that way.
So why does the Republican Senate leader go around the country saying, vote for us, trust me?
Yeah, Richard, explain that. You said something that Mitch McConnell said there's no legislative agenda.
Well, Mitch
what does
McConnell
that mean?
Said that, but what then, the? but then, and I'm gonna, and this is how I'm gonna all tie it together. But then, if you listen to Rick Scott, who's a senator where Larkin and I live in Florida, he's got a multi-point plan, a couple which does somewhat touch on real life issues of cost of living, but then it meanders into areas of forcing kids to say the Pledge of Allegiance in the nuclear family. So how many people have you talked to who've said, I'm about ready to go bankrupt, I think it's important to protect the nuclear family? I mean, how many people have you had that conversation with Danny? Out and about.
Yeah, I understand
zero,
your frustration,
right?
Because...
Yeah, so what I'm asking, you know, is this. As a business owner to an executive director, here's my question. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you have to answer this question, so it's rhetorical. What am I being asked to buy by the GOP? What are they asking me to purchase?
Yeah.
What are you asking
Absolutely.
Me? What is it I'm supposed to be buying? What am I supposed to be buying here? Because I went through Kevin McCarthy's Twitter today, because he's the GOP minority leader in the House. And he's talking about the Ministry of Truth. Talking about lowering prescription drug costs, which is funny because 99% of his party voted against capping insulin prices in the House. I'm not really sure what that's about. And then he's talking about something about Hunter Biden's laptops. How many people right now worried about homelessness are probably worried about Hunter Biden's laptops in the coal mines that you visit?
That's
How
right.
Many? How many? I'm asking.
But you know, Richard.
Michael, what am I being asked to buy?
That's right. But here's something that I don't understand.
No. Everyone has to. What am I being asked to? Mark.
Bull.
What are you being asked to purchase, to buy? Tell me. What is it? What is it?
For once.
Well,
if I can jump in.
Please. I want to know.
If I can jump in.
Sure. Please. I yield to Larkin.
Yep. what we saw last night will tell you what America is buying right now. What are they asked to buy? At this point, it's anything that doesn't have Joe Biden's name on it, which is a very, very sorry state of affairs. There were 14 major elections in Ohio very late in the game, like 3 or 4 weeks before the election. Trump finally came out and endorsed 14 people. How many of those 14 people won? All 14.
That's right.
Every candidate he supported. Now, can Trump be president again? No. We all know that. I'm sorry. He invalidated himself. He's got great ideas. And if you eliminate his personality from everything, he would have been one of the greatest presidents we ever had. But he just, you know, I'll tell you a very quick story. I met a Secret Service agent and spent a day with him at his house. And I'm not going to get into who he is and what he is. But he is from the White House detail. He served in the White House presidential detail for Obama and Trump. And I said, can you clarify the Trump administration to me? And now this is a very, very conservative, decorated Marine who now trains Secret Service agents. And he said, I don't know how to say this to you, but if you're a Trump supporter, the White House during his administration was complete and total mayhem. Every day, every hour, every minute, every second, it was totally out of control. So that's why he can never be president again, because he just doesn't have that political moxie to do the right thing. But do I stand and believe for what he stands for and what he did while he was president, beyond his behavioral issues? Yes. And I think that's what America's buying right now. I think Ohio, which was touted by every news outlet as the great Trump test, proves that he's still wagging the tail.
You know, Larkin, that's all very true.
You got to let me cut in, because I really have to give Larkin an immense amount of credit for that answer. And here's why, Larkin, because it is 100% an honest answer. In 2020, the country was asked to buy anything but Trump. In 2022 and in 2024, the country is going to be, right, the opposing party, I mean, is what I'm saying, the opposite, the challenging party, right? The Democrats in 2020 said anything but Trump, and in 22 and in 24, the GOP will say anything but Biden. So, Michael, you've hosted this show for over a decade. You've brought on lots of guests, had many, many ideas on what to do, what not to do, sort out issues and solutions. When the standard for many and perhaps most voters is simply the other, I'm just going to go with the other. Mm-hmm. How realistic do you think it is that big problems can have resolutions over time?
Absolutely.
When the only standard is, right, one right, Daniel, when one is, I mean, if you were asked for money, Daniel, and said, well, why should I give to Daniel's organization? And your answer is, well, I suck. I just suck a little less. How effective will you be in getting money? even when my mother, God rest her soul, rest in peace, Michael, even when I'd go to my mother as a young kid and ask her for help for money, okay, even my own mother, who never had any background in business, would ask me how I intended to spend the money. I couldn't get Daniel $20 from my mother without knowing that. So, Michael, if that's the Larkin is 100% accurate, not 99.9, 100% accurate. If that's the only standard, just not the other guy, how are we going to solve these big problems?
Well, you know, we're coming up.
How are we going to even start it?
You know, we got some good points in this little conversation in the last few minutes. I think it's time for us to start asking all the people running for office, and in the midterms, the whole Congress runs, but the media won't do it. We have to start asking this question. If the cost of energy continues to go up and not be reduced, we're going to lose more small and medium-sized businesses and have more difficulties in this country because they can't pay their operational costs, and they certainly won't be able to pay their employees. Those are the kinds of questions should be asked to the people running. And if they can't come up with the right answer, out the damn door you go.
No, listen to me very carefully. They asked these very questions of Trump and Biden last election, and the answer didn't matter.
Right, because it was the person. The media had it out for the president. But we have no situation like that in the midterms. It's time to ask the people running for Congress, what are you going to do about this energy issue? Are you all going to get together and remove this executive order and get this country back to a level of actual operational possibilities? Or are we going to just continue to go on and on and on and on the way we are doing right now? This may be the opportunity. I don't care if it's Democrats, Republicans, or independents. I will vote for the people who speak up for the American people. Energy's killing us. killing every American.
And yet I have progressives and liberals stare me straight in the face and say the number one issue is climate change. Number two can't even be seen from here. Can't even be seen. And what do you say to that? What do you say to that?
Well, that's why more and more people, everywhere I go, people tell me, Michael, you're right, term limits should be no more than 12 years. You must be exited. Another thing that should always happen is no person goes to their grave being the majority leader forever and ever and ever. Some of these people should be given 4 years. Let them show what they can do. Out, bring the next person in, and let's have some. You get these people on the Appropriations Committee, it becomes almost like a circus. You might as well have Putin come and run the country over here now, the way things are going.
And I will say this, if anybody watched the news for the last couple of days, I find, has nothing to do with political parties, I find what happened yesterday and the day before with the Speaker of our House parading her, I think that pantsuit she was wearing, probably $2,500, parading herself through that country was absolutely deplorable. And the problem is what she was saying had absolutely no resemblance to what the president said, has been saying. Didn't resemble at all, except that we'll support you. We will support you. And hell, she could have mailed a postcard. Listen, Rich has hit the nail smack dab on the head. And I'd love to hear everybody's resolve to the very point. We don't know what we're buying. We have no idea. How do you know? It's I guess what they're selling, but they're selling whatever they feel like selling.
And Larkin, to this point, and Daniel and everyone, if you guys really think about this, Mark, Michael, Henry, everybody, Mike Sessions, listen, everybody listening, politics is the only business where we make that excuse.
Right.
There's no other business, Larkin, we make that. You went into the night, you go into your favorite restaurant. If that owner insulted Joe after you knocked the teeth out of the owner, you and Joe would never go back, ever.
Right.
Michael, you wouldn't go. Daniel, somebody came, right? I'm not advocating violence, just so everyone knows. I'm not advocating knocking anyone's teeth out, okay? Just to be clear. This is the only business we make that excuse in. And that is a discussion, Daniel, for a different time, which my hypothesis of it is that I believe that the United States is a very politically traumatized nation. And that until we start to get past that, we're just going to be stuck in this neutral. And this cycle is going to keep going on and on, Michael.
Daniel,
so
I'm going to.
That's a different discussion for a different show, but Larkin's 100% accurate.
I want to ask Daniel. Daniel, if you were the president, what would you do right now to change this nightmare?
I mean, it begins right off the bat with energy production. So access to oil and gas production is it's going to take months. And that's the frustrating thing, is people are going to want immediate results. That's what Biden tried to do with the million barrels a day from the strategic reserves. Oil prices have gone up since then. Gas prices have gone up since then. That's what he's tried to do with his overtures to Venezuela and the Saudis. Oil prices have gone up since then. The only thing that will solve it in the long term, and the only sustainable solution, is to produce more energy here at home. But like I said, it's going to take a little while. I will say, when it comes to this election, and I really appreciate the conversation. I understand your frustration. I am not campaigning for the GOP. I'm not speaking on their behalf, so I'm not selling you anything. But I will say this, doing this business for some time now, there really aren't that many pollsters alive who have data to talk about how you message around inflation. We know how to message around war. We know how to message around abortion. We know how to message around crime. But inflation has not been a national conversation since the 1970s, and the American people are feeling this for the first time. Food prices, which have not even begun to go up the way they're about to go up, we're still feeding our cattle last year's corn, right? We're still eating last year's wheat, and it's costing our farmers three times the price to plant right now. So food prices and meat prices in the end of the summer are going to be astronomical. You add on top of that, this is the most energy-intensive season of the year. We use more energy May through September than the rest of the than any other 4 months. Energy prices are going to get much, much worse. So when we go into the ballot box in November, you add 40-year inflation that no one understands, food shortages and food prices that really since the Great Depression we have not seen, and energy prices that are just crippling the American family. I don't know what to expect from the voters now. And I think you throw on top of that, we've already started to see some urban violence because of the Roe decision last night. If you are an agitator, you've been bored the last 2 years. The summer of love since the George Floyd death was 2 years ago. So you're excited that you have a reason to burn police cars and break down windows. So get ready, Philadelphia and New York and L.A., where it happened last night, in Chicago. You add all these factors together, I think we're headed towards a very, very, very painful summer in America on many levels, and we have an administration entirely unequipped to handle it. So to answer your question, sir, what are you asking me to buy? I think when we get to November, people just they just want out. They just want off this ride, and they don't know how to get there.
Well, you're very right. Oh, my God. You know, the more I talk to people who are working for campaigning for this congressman and that congressman, they're more anti-American than I could ever imagine. All they want to do is get their own carcasses in those jobs, get the, you know, assistant to this and that. They don't care about the American people and the people that they represent. If they did, they'd be speaking up about all this inflation and the gas issues and everything else and the crime. Instead, they're just letting things go on and on and on. I want to take this opportunity to say thank you to our very special guest, Daniel Turner. You will see a picture of him on the email that we send out to thousands of people this afternoon, along with a copy of our broadcast. Once again, I'd like to say thank you to Larkin Conley, Rich Logis, Mark Andel, Daniel Turner, and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Bleihash. Thank you for tuning in. Daniel, you got to come back. And I like it when everybody has their say in the matter, because this is what's missing in America. They're standing there, Mr. Chairman, Mr. This and that. It's all bull and no action. Until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11, may God bless you and may God bless America.
Have a great week, guys. Thanks.